Hello and welcome back to the Third Period Podcast, where we take a look at the UK's ice hockey leagues. We're sponsored by Willie's Ice Hockey Emporium for all your ice hockey needs. Check them out.
Good evening and welcome back to the Third Period Podcast. I'm Ash and with me tonight we've got Danny, Ross and Scott. Evening guys, hope you're all right. Moving on from us, we've got a guest tonight and tonight's guest is the first guest for our Netminder Month. A player who was drafted by the Winnipeg Jets in 2012. He played half a season for the Blaze in 2019 and has since became a coach back in North America. We welcome Jamie Phillips. Thank you for joining us this evening, Jamie. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Very good, thank you. Still sat in lockdown and missing hockey.
Yeah, that's true. No Elite League this year, and I see that you guys are on your second or third lockdown in the UK. It's pretty brutal.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely is. So, Jamie, we'll get kind of like the ad hoc stuff out of the way for you, the kind of standardized questions. So, with ice hockey, we ask everybody, what's their first memory and why ice hockey?
Well, I'm Canadian, so it's a birthright that you have to play hockey. But one of my first memories is probably just like a frozen pond. And I feel like that's a lot of kids' stories. But my parents put me on skates as soon as I could walk. And I just remember I was wearing this like green helmet. And it was in this back forest and I was just trying to stand up, and I just remember the helmet and I remember trying my best not to fall over. And I think I was probably around, I don't know, maybe two and a half, so pretty young. So it's a pretty good memory, and it's the oldest memory I have as well.
Oh wow, that's a good one to hold on to as well. To the question obviously that we've never asked anybody because you're the first one, why a netminder?
It's a good question. I always wanted to play goalie. Growing up, I was a forward, and I was pretty good. And you know, my dad was one of those kind of like crazy hockey parents. I guess maybe he saw that I was, you know, doing well, and so he put a lot of pressure on me, and it kind of the game, you know, not fun. And so I came up with an ultimatum for him. I said, either you let me become a goalie, or I'm just going to quit hockey. And I think he kind of realized that he was, you know, pushing too hard. And so when I was 12, I made the switch to goalie, which is a lot later than most kids. But I think it was something about just the gear. And then I was always goalie at road hockey when I was like, my older brother would force me and put me in net so his friends could take slap shots on me. And I think that's kind of where I got the itch.
I bet he was trying to steer you away because he realized how much more expensive was about to get for his pockets. I know if it's
yeah, anything, that's also true. that is true. It is not a cheap position and not a cheap sport. So I have a lot of thanks and a lot of things I owe my parents for opening their wallets to let me play.
No. Did you ever think you'd go pro when they first let you get into it?
That's a good question. I actually think about that one kind of often, where you just like, I kind of just knew that this is what I wanted to do and I wasn't gonna let anything stop me. So I kind of just always, I always just expect it. I knew that, like, obviously got put in the work and stuff, but it just seemed like it was going to happen. And so, you know, you just continue to work and you have lots of, you know, lots of lows, a few highs, and it kind of just, you know, it's kind of weird to say it just happened, but it, you know, even when I was young, I was like, hey, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it. I'm going to make it happen no matter what. And yeah, I guess to answer your question, yeah, something I kind of always wanted to do. The fact that it happened, I guess, is a lot of luck and a lot of, you know, hard work. But I mean, I was able to make a dream come true. So that's pretty cool.
Well, you get drafted in 2012, round 7, 190th overall. We've spoke to a few players and their draft experience is a little different. So what did you know about going into the draft and how was that for you?
My draft experience depends who you ask and what round they went in. But in my eyes, I wasn't even on the draft list until about February. The draft happens in the summer. I wasn't on the list until February because I was traded in the junior league I was playing. And I guess I traded to a kind of a weaker team. And I played really well for the period of time that I was there. And I guess someone important on the NHL scouting board, they saw me and they really liked me. So they just kind of like threw my name on the list. And I remember a friend called one day. He's like, hey, did you know you're on the draft list? I was like, no, like, okay, that's cool, whatever. And no one called me except for Winnipeg And they just said, are you going to be at the draft? I said, no. They said, all right, like, we're not going to tell you we're going to take you, but, you know, if you're hanging around, then, you know, you're on our list. That's it. So I remember I was watching the draft on my computer because I didn't, like, the first, at that time, the first round was on TV. And then after the first round, they didn't even bother broadcasting it. So I just kept refreshing my page, refreshing my page. And then eventually the last round came up and I hit refresh and my name was up and I was just sitting in my room and I ran down to tell my dad and he did like a hot lap around the backyard. He was mowing the lawn. And yeah, that was pretty cool. But it wasn't like one of the ones where you walk down to get your jersey just because that's kind of reserved for superstars and not guys like me in the last round.
I think the only thing I refresh my computer for is when I'm waiting on an email that someone said they've sent me earlier in the day. So must have been quite a weird experience, but a great one at the same time.
Yeah, it is a huge privilege, and they're just like, it's one of those ones where everyone has a different experience, and mine, I just happened to be sitting in my room and some people just happened to, you know, get to walk down the stage and put on the jersey, but it is what it is.
So it's the NCAA route for yourself after that, Michigan Tech. How was that? Because looking from your stats, you kind of earned your stripes, it seems. You played a few games and then you progressively got some more game time as the year went on.
Yeah, so when I came in, my goalie partner that I came in with, we were both freshmen, was Phoenix Copley. And he's in the Washington system. Yeah, he won a Stanley Cup with Washington two or three years ago. So we were together and he basically outplayed me. And then because he was a senior, we got like a couple of games. So I was like the third string my first year, which was really, really kind of a frustrating and difficult thing to, you know, to kind of get used to. That combined with now you're getting a university education, it's busy, it's a lot, it's really stressful. The next year, the senior had graduated and it was Phoenix, myself, and a freshman. Phoenix still played the majority of the games, but I got, you know, I earned a couple more. And then I guess looking back at it, fortunately, Phoenix signed an NHL deal and he left. And then so my third and fourth year, I played every single game except for one. And, you know, we had some good teams and I played pretty well in the games I was given. And then from there, I earned my opportunity. But when your goalie partner is a Stanley Cup champion, sometimes it just is what it is and you're not going to get a lot of games.
What was the educational side like? I don't mean to go ahead here, but from when you're in Coventry, I noticed whenever you're around, you seem to have a book in your hand. You seem to be quite the academic and enjoy that sort of thing.
Yeah, I just enjoy learning. And I guess like one of the things I realized, the biggest thing I realized when I first turned pro was there's just so much free time. It's a whole lot of doing nothing. Your day is basically over about one in the afternoon. And so when I first signed, I kind of, you know, I didn't know what I want to do. I started trying to play instruments. I just doing this and that. I was never like a video game guy, so I wouldn't play just hours and hours of Call of Duty. So I just decided to basically just read as much as I could and try to soak up as much information about as many different things as I could over my playing career. And I knew eventually I was going to go back to school when I retired, so I wanted to at least keep my brain somewhat sharp.
So after Michigan, you went to play for Manitoba Moose in the AHL, playing 11 games. And then you dropped down to Toulouse Oilers playing 31 games. What a big, huge step that was from going from college straight to the AHL. How was that?
It was a pretty pretty big jump. So I actually started in the East Coast and was called to the American League. So I switched that the other. And actually, when I first got to the East Coast, we had a good team and I played really well. So I figured, I honestly thought, oh, this pro hockey thing is easy. This is not a big deal at all. And then when getting called to the American League, it's a huge, huge jump. And, you know, I didn't play horrible, but it was definitely an adjustment. It took a few games to kind of get used to it. But there's a big and a noticeable difference from college hockey to pro. I mean, you're just taking the best players from college and just putting them all in the league, as well as guys from junior and overseas. So the skill level, everything's better. And then that just forces, you know, had to force me to elevate my game and elevate, you know, the way I practice and the way I train just to be able to, you know, earn a opportunity to get called up to the, you know, next level.
And in 2017, you also played for the NHL Young Stars, playing for Winnipeg. What an experience that must have been for yourself.
Yeah, that was a cool opportunity. In the summers, they bring out the top prospects, and we'd play against the top prospects from Edmonton, Calgary, and Vancouver. And so that was a pretty, you know, great experience. That's like the first time you get to put on the actual Jets jersey and represent the organization. So that, it was a really awesome feeling. You play against a lot of guys that are now your Hall of Famers. So, yeah, really, really privileged to be able to play in that.
And then after that, you played for a few teams in the East Coast, Jacksonville Icemen, Florida Everblades, and Reading Royals. You know, what was it like playing week in, week out in the East Coast for yourself?
It's a grind. I mean, you probably hear from guys that, you know, have played in the East Coast League. It's a grind. You have a lot of four games and five nights, a lot of three games and three nights. The travel is, it's pretty crazy. You know, you might have some games where you have to play after a 22-hour bus ride. I enjoyed it though. It was the guys, you know, the guys and the team, like your teammates are just great guys, and you kind of, you build that camaraderie, just kind of, you know, basically you're just frustrated and you're going to war every night and you complain about the boss, you complain about the travel, but all that kind of brings you together because you have the same problems. And so I really enjoyed my time. I know there's a lot of guys that, you know, when they get sent down to the East Coast, they think it's a punishment or they're just miserable. And I just, you know, it was what it was. And so, you know, I knew that I'm here for a reason. Let's make the most of it. And, you know, I was, whichever way you want to look at it, whether you're fortunate enough to play in a lot of teams or unlucky to play in a lot of teams, I was able to play in a bunch of different places and meet a lot of really cool people.
Well, you've mentioned playing in lots of different places over in the coast and 22-hour bus journeys. Summer 2019, you make the move to Europe and to Coventry, over to the Blaze. What made you consider Europe? And was it always in the back of your mind somewhere saying, I want to test overseas?
Yeah, I knew that I was kind of starting to get towards the end of my career. I didn't know how much longer I wanted to play, but I always wanted to go, like, give it a shot in Europe. And, you know, Coventry reached out real early, and I kind of, like, waited and waited just to see what was available. And there wasn't a whole lot available at that time because I kind of honestly had waited a little too long to decide to go to Europe. Most of the teams are picked kind of like in January, February, they start to kind of get their next year signings in. So I was a little, you know, late to the party, but, you know, when I was able, I reached out to Cov and say, hey, like, yeah, I'll come play. And I was like, all right, let's give it a shot.
Just going to go back slightly. You mentioned there about coming towards the end. You're still young. You were still a young guy when you came to Coventry. What made you think that? Because in a way you're kind of in the prime years, if the phrase there.
Yeah, I was kind of getting frustrated with a lot of it, and it was hard. There were some days where it was kind of hard to find the fun in the game, especially towards, you know, as frustrations with how things were going in, you know, the East Coast and the American League, where I was playing really well and getting a lot of wins, but the opportunities were far and few between. And so I was just kind of like, all right, like, you know, what am I doing? When you play in four different cities in 1 year, you're, you know, it's hard to find a steady home. You know, I've got a longtime girlfriend, that's frustrating. It's just like kind of a lot of things were like, I was basically questioning how long I wanted to do this. And I was like, let's go to Europe. It's a change of scenery. Maybe it'll start, like, you know, spark of the flame, and I'll get excited and enjoy hockey again. And to be honest, like, I did. I kind of found I was really enjoying it, playing in Cov, and enjoying being in the guys that I play, but I still talk to almost everybody. So I was, you know, I don't regret the decision to come over to Europe at all.
With the move over to Coventry and into Europe, how was Coventry sold to you? So obviously, we're all from the area. We've lived here all our life. We know the good parts and the bad parts. How is it sold to you as an import ice hockey player coming to Great Britain?
You know what? Honestly, everyone's different. There are some guys who, you know, they want to hear about the city. They want to hear about this. They want to hear about that. I didn't care where in the world I was going to play. I just wanted to play. I mean, I played in some horrible cities and I played in some awesome spots. And to me, it just doesn't matter. It didn't really matter. I mean, this location, whether, you know, I was playing in Fort Myers in Florida where it never rained and you can go to the beach every day, or, you know, I won't mention any of the names of the other places that were horrible, but some horrible places. You know, it was, my job was to be a goalie. My job was not to, you know, enjoy the nightlife every night. It was just to show up and try to win as many games as possible. But as soon as I got to Cove, I was like, okay, this is, I liked it. I know it gets a bad rap from some people, but I really, really enjoyed my time there.
When you got to Coventry, and kind of two-pronged question here. What was your first impression of the Sky Dome? Is part A, as to say. But there's always talk, and there's been talk for years, and the lads will probably look in the background now and start nodding. There was always talks that the nets in the Sky Dome were dodgy. They wouldn't stay on the moorings, and a previous netminder blaze, Brian Stewart, could just put his elbow on one, and it was going spinning around the ice. What was your impression of the nets and the moorings? Were they as bad as we were told?
The first thought of the Sky Dome was, it is what it is. And then the second was the nets. And the first, one of the first things I did was I talked to Coach Stewart, and we ordered, like, not the NHL pegs where they drill it in, but like kind of like the next best thing, where like they're called anchor pegs, and they're basically a happy medium between the NHL peg and like the crappy ones with the nub on them that don't work. So we put those in, and it made like a crazy difference, because now the nets would stay on most of the time instead of coming off every single time. Because like, you just, you know, maybe in the 80s goalies could play with the posts off like that, but in today's style, it just doesn't, you know, we use the posts so much for leverage and anchoring that you have to have a strong foundation in the ice. So yeah, first thing I did was get order pegs. I just said, like, we need to have pegs and it's not going to work.
Yeah. I think, throughout the seasons, certain teams have not bothered to try and encourage the pegs, because they'll knock it off the moorings quite a bit. Obviously, your time in Coventry didn't see out the season. What do you feel was the reasons for that, from your perspective?
I don't know. You don't have to get in too deep, but I don't want to badmouth anyone or any organization, because you know what? I had fun in Cove, and I won't lie and say that I didn't. It was just came down to they just either they weren't happy or they just had other ideas. And it's kind of weird to get, you know, to get cut after a 3-game win streak. That's kind of a weird one, but you know, they had their minds made up probably from a long time before that, regardless of whether we won games or not. And, you know, if they weren't happy with me, they weren't happy in this. And there's no, at the end of the day, there's no friends between organizations and players, or friendship, I should say, between the players and the organization. But it is what it is. And I was bummed, because like I said earlier, like, I was enjoying it and hockey was fun again. And that kind of, as soon as I was released there, I was like, okay, I'm not, like, this is my last year of hockey. I'm not going to play anymore. Because before that, I figured, okay, you know what? I'll probably play another year or two, especially maybe I'll come back to Cove for another year or two and then enjoy it and then kind of set up my life from there. But as soon as they said it was done, I was like, okay, I don't want to play anymore. This is too much.
When I spoke to a few guys around the rink and the players and Ethan as well, and the one thing that they did say was, everyone got on with yourself and you seem to be a real tight knit. So that must have been hard as well, personally, to just then get up and go.
Yeah, it was. And I know a lot of the guys were pretty surprised when it happened. I mean, I was very surprised. It was disappointing, because, you know, everything was fun again. And the guys were just the kind of guys that you wanted to just hang out with and see every day. And like, you'd show up to the rink and you just knew that you're going to laugh and you're, you know, it's going to be a good time. So that was a bummer. And yeah, like guys like Eve and, you know, great trainers, everyone was just, I could say numerous times, like, I enjoyed everything. It's just, it sucks that the organization decided that they wanted to go a separate way, and, you know, they have every right to do it. It just sucks for me.
Yeah. I mean, t- tough times, and appreciate you talking about that, because it's probably not a nice feeling. What was your thoughts on the Elite League as general? Because obviously you've come from America and now you're playing in the Elite League. What did you think of the standard? And could you see certain teams playing, of the good teams in the Elite League, playing over in the East Coast or maybe to an AHL level?
It was a much better league than I thought it was going to be. Like when you're over here, you kind of hear stories about, especially how it used to be a goon league. And then just kind of like, you know, it's a league for if you want to get, you know, your education or whatever it is. But then getting over here, the kind of how I explained it is it's basically a league between the East Coast and the American League, where it's definitely better than the East Coast, but it's not as good as the American League, because you'll have a lot of players who can play in the coast, but then you have a lot of guys, especially that go around to the top teams, who have a lot of NHL experience, KHL, the top leagues in Europe. So they kind of elevate the pace of play. But that's kind of the comparison I give guys, is between the East Coast and the American League.
So after leaving Coventry, you went to play for Cincinnati Cyclones in the East Coast, only playing 7 games before going to play for Brampton Beasts. How come the short spell in Cincinnati?
So when I went to Cincy, they had it. So I came home and I was trying to go back to Europe, and I actually had a couple offers from some other elite league teams. And just because I already had my visa, so it was pretty easy just for me to fly back. Some of the offers just kind of weren't right money-wise in order for me to go all the way back and just, you know, go through it all over again. So Cincinnati, there was one of the goalies in Buffalo got hurt, and they'd called up guys. And so this coach in Cincy is like, hey, well, why don't you just come here? If you leave and go to Europe, it's just whatever, like, come, you know, I'm not going to tell you how long you're going to play, but be the guy. And so I just said, okay, like I've been sitting at home for a couple of weeks now. So I went to Cincy and things were good. And I ended up playing probably more games than I was probably penciled into, because there's another injury. So I ended up starting for a bunch. But then Brampton, who was they were pretty decent. They were looking to make a run and they had potential to kind of go deep. And so they had reached out and said, okay, well, let's look at Phillips. They said, you know, will you make the trade? Will you come over? Especially, and then that combined with the guy in the NHL was kind of getting healthy again. So there wasn't a guarantee that I was going to even really have a spot. So I said, yeah, like if I'm going to go to Brampton and play every night and then make a push in the playoffs, like sign me up. So that was kind of how that deal went down. And I think I only played 3 games for Brampton because COVID shut it down.
COVID's got a lot to answer for, that's for sure. And then obviously after Brampton, you decided to hand the skates up.
Yeah. So when I knew that I was going to go back to school at some point in my life. Even if I'd played in the NHL for 20 years and made, you know, millions of dollars, I'm not the type of person who just kind of like sits around and kind of does nothing. Although it would be nice to sit around and do nothing with a couple million dollars in the bank. But I knew that wasn't going to be the reality kind of early on in the pro career. So I was kind of orchestrating something with the head coach at Michigan Tech, which is a school I played at. And the head coach there was the assistant when I had played to get a good relationship. And they didn't have a goalie coach position. And in the NCAA, it's a volunteer. There's only so many coaches allowed to be paid. So there's a volunteer position. So we kind of talked about it. I was let go from Coventry. I called them and I said, hey, his name is Joe Sean. I said, Coach Sean, like, you know, I'm done. Like I want to play hockey after this year. If it's possible, I'd like to go get my master's and coach with you guys. And he's like, yeah, let me see what I can do. And so actually throughout my time playing in Cincy, I was going through my application. I was doing all my letters. I was making sure everything was good. And eventually once everything was organized with, you know, the scholarships and the positions and stuff, I knew that it was over. So when I went to Brampton, I knew, like, I was kind of got excited again, because I knew like, this is the end. Like, I'm not going to play hockey after this year. So like, let's just go out in a bang. Let's see how far we can go. And let's try to win a championship. And then that'd be a cool way to end it. Fortunately, it didn't turn out that way, but yeah, so that's kind of the plan all along. And I'm very fortunate that things kind of worked out the way they have, because the transition into sort of real life, not yet, still like back in the third university student, but that transition it's been smoother for me than it is for a lot of guys that suddenly, you know, retire for whatever reason. You know, they have to get jobs maybe they don't enjoy, or they're kind of stuck figuring out what do they want to do. So I'm very happy that, you know, the university allowed me this opportunity.
It's good to hear you kind of had preparations ahead. You kind of thought the next chapter after hockey, because like you said, a lot of people, you know, don't have that. So Ross has already touched upon there for you, for yourself, Jamie, about the coaching aspect. We're kind of tying this into a previous guest we've had on now with this. Trav for Oilers, YouTube, obviously, personality, as he likes to refer to himself as. We've seen a couple of videos where you make appearances in that. Do you know Trav quite well, or was it just through the kind of coaching aspect that he kind of come onto the scene?
Yeah, it's surprising how big Trav is in the UK. It's pretty wild. But so Trav is from Winnipeg. And so when I was, he's a diehard Jets Moose fan. So when I was there, like I kind of watched his videos passively. You know, they'd always pop up my recommendations. And I was just kind of like, whatever, you know, he's doing his thing. He wants to blog all his hockey. I respect that. And so I remember once, I don't know if he reached out to me or I reached out to, I think I might've reached out to him. I said, hey buddy, like love what you're doing. You know, if you want tickets to any Moose games while I'm here, just let me know. And, you know, we get two tickets a night that are free. So I would just give him, you know, hook him up with tickets. And that's kind of how we established a relationship. This past summer, he was looking for ice. He was doing this cross Canada road trip or whatever it was. And so the goalie school that I skate at, Bujan Goaltending, they kind of like orchestrated it, where he's like, hey, like, you know, it's hard to find ice. Like, how about we come film some blogs? We'll do some things. And, you know, and he dragged me out of retirement. I told him I'll put on the pads for one day, for one skate only, out of the week he was here. And so we did that. But yeah, he's a good guy. And, you know, it was the first time we ever skated together, was during those vlogs. And you know what, if for those watching, he's actually better than he looks on YouTube. I was quite surprised. You know, he still has the ways to go, but he's better than I thought. So I'll give him a ton of credit for that.
Yeah. I've watched him for years from playing in juniors here, and I kind of stumbled across him through someone else. And I think I watched him when he was still in his college days, like early years. And that's how I know of the name. But yeah, he's very harsh on himself. I said that to him when we had him on for an episode. I said he's very harsh. He's his own biggest critic. He likes to critique himself too much. But the episode you had on with him, I think you were giving him some stick. You had a bit of a fight with him as well in one of the episodes.
Yeah, we had a little bit of a play fight. It wasn't too much, but we were playing like a game, and it got a little heated. But two competitive guys. But you're definitely right, Danny. He is a little too hard on himself, and I know he plays up the, you know, the Trav sucks promo codes and things, yeah. But he doesn't suck as much as everyone, all the comments on YouTube say.
No, he's definitely a lot better than some people give him credit for.
Okay, Alan, Jeremy, we've asked every previous guest so far this question. From your playing career, who would be your all-time top six you've played alongside at any point during your career? One netminder, two D-men, three forwards.
Oh, man. One netminder. Well, I got a netminder played alongside. I got to go Phoenix Copley. An awesome guy. Great guy. You know, we're college roommates, college partners. So we get to that. Defenseman. I'm going to play with some. Julian Melchiori, I think he plays in the Dell now. We played together in Manitoba. And Shane Hanna, we played together at Michigan Tech. He plays in Denmark. The two D. Oh man, no one's ever asked me this question. This is a difficult question. I got to go back to college. I got to go Alex Patan. He plays in, he was in the Dell last year. Now he's in, I think it's the Ice HL. It's a new, whatever, the Evil used to be. The Evil used to be. They renamed it. He's in that. Yeah. Darren Kramer, he was actually the fighter in Manitoba. Just all around, probably one of the best guys you'll ever meet. And he is so tough. But he's just like, he's also like, he's got one of those like super smart, like entrepreneurial engineering brains. And so him and I used to just talk for hours about anything and everything. And so I loved playing with him. And you know what? He was a D man. He's hard. I'm just trying to think. My captain when I played in Florida, John McCarron, Cornell grad, awesome guy. You know, he was one of those guys that is like the textbook definition of a leader. So I loved playing with him. I really enjoyed, playing with him and having him as my captain, because one of those guys that you just know, like, yeah, I'll go to war with this guy every night. So those are my guys. No NHL guys, because I didn't get the official NHL game. I got the call up, but no games, so I can't say any NHL names.
No, it's your six, so you choose. I've heard of a couple. I've not heard of all, so I've got to go and do some homework myself personally. That's all the questions I've got this evening. So I'm going to do a quick round robin of the rest of the guys, see if anything else. I'm going to go to Ross first.
Yeah, just one question, Jamie. For all the kids that want to be a netminder, what advice can you give to them?
I'll give the cliche advice first, which is like, it sounds cliche, but it's true. Like, just keep working. And even if things don't go well, you're giving up 10 goals a night, if you truly love it and you're truly willing to put in the work, like, you'll be surprised what can happen. And then from technical advice is try to be the best, like, goalie skater you could be. Like, everyone says, oh, a goalie should be the best skater, like, blah, blah, blah. No, like, it doesn't matter how fast you can skate forward. How good are you on your edges and all? That's a big separator between okay goalies and great goalies. If you, for example, just look at the guy like Andrei Vasilevskiy and like Sergei Bobrovsky and compare them to like a Robin Lehner. And not to take anything away from Robin Lehner, NHL goalie, really good goalie. But those two guys, in terms of their technical abilities, are just a step, like 10 steps ahead. And that's one of those things. So if you can improve your game to the point where you're able to be such a good skater that you're better than all the kids you compete against, that's going to take you a long way.
Super. Scott, have you got anything else from you?
Yeah, Jamie, obviously you said from early on that you had frustrations with the game and you knew certain points that your career was ended. Do you think that was because of it is a harsh life being a netminder? And you are thrown from pillar to post, and maybe it's a different experience for an outfield player.
Maybe. I mean, there's only one net. There's only one net and only one guy can play in it. For me, I was kind of getting frustrated where, you know, the reality of hockey being a business is if you're not a high draft pick, or unless someone in the organization really loves you, the opportunities aren't going to come as often as they will for other guys that, you know, that either they're higher draft picks or someone likes them. And even if that means they aren't necessarily always better than you, that's just the way it is. And I guess for me, there was a defining moment where I knew, like, hey, maybe this wasn't it, where my final exit meeting I had with the Jets, they had told, like, the GM had said, and I appreciate the honesty to it, but he just said, he's like, you have done everything right these last 2 years, and you had earned an opportunity and we didn't give it to you. And that kind of was like one of those moments where, you know, you hear your whole life, if you just work hard and you do everything right, you'll get your opportunity. And to hear that the opportunity was earned but it wasn't given, then I was like, this isn't what I want to do then. Because for 2 years, I was very frustrated with the fact that I wasn't playing as much in the American League, you know, and I was working hard, I was training hard, and I was doing everything I could, and statistically my number was good and I was getting wins, and I couldn't figure out why I wasn't playing. And so I kind of beat myself up for 2 years thinking maybe I'm just horrible and this, you know, they don't like you and things are bad and nothing you're doing is working, when it turns out everything I was doing was the right thing. You know, they just didn't you just didn't give me an opportunity. And so that kind of moment was when I was like, okay, like, let's play for a couple more years, but this isn't what you want to do the rest of your life. And so I had signed an American League deal after that. And then, but I knew like I was going to transition away from playing after that moment. It was kind of weird. That was like one defining moment, but that kind of was it.
So if you got a call tomorrow, the answer is no.
Yeah. The answer is 100% no. Actually, to be funny, we only had one goalie for practice the other day, and I don't have my gear here. My gear is in my parents' attic back home. And some of the guys are giving me a hard time for not strapping up one of the other goalies' gears and putting it on. But you know what? I'm at the point where like I have played hockey for so long and done it for so long and worked so hard at it that I'm just like kind of burnt out of playing. And to be fair, it sounds weird because it's a completely like privileged point of view, because I had the opportunity that not many people in the world had and play professional sports and live out your dream. But I'm enjoying not playing hockey. I'm enjoying life outside of the game. You know, even though I coach, I enjoy not having the stress of having to show up for game days and, you know, pregame naps in my routine. I'm enjoying the fact that I can go and, you know, I started to do a lot of Nordic skiing. I can just go ski anytime I want. If I want to do this, I can do that. When before I was kind of constrained to just like, you know, don't get injured, make sure you show up every day and perform. But now I can just kind of enjoy life outside of it. And it's pretty refreshing and I'm enjoying it a lot.
In that way, I suppose you're in quite a fortunate position. You've walked away from the game on your terms. You're not. It's because your body's caught up with you, or teams don't want to sign you. It's on your terms, and that's probably quite a unique thing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, obviously, everyone wants the Ray Bourque, you know, ending where you win the Stanley Cup. But, you know, my ending was, I had set up the exit plan, and COVID kind of brought everything, ended things a little quickly. The only regret I have towards the end was that I just wish that my family and friends could have been at my last game, because we didn't know it was the last game. It's one thing if you're like, hey, you're down in a series 3-1. Like, hey, everybody, if we lose, like, this is going to be my last game, come out and watch. Or if we win, like, we're going to win the championship, come out and watch. But because it was just another Tuesday night in Brampton, I was pretty fortunate. My mom, who actually has probably only seen maybe like five games in her whole life that I've ever played, she was able to got the night off work, and so she came and watched because she just had the night off. So I'm pretty happy about that. But if I had known what it was in that last game, I would have had all my family and friends out just to be there and just, you know, go out to eat after the game and just, you know, reminisce and talk stories. Or instead it was just game's over, you get a text, hey, season's done, we don't know what's going on. That kind of sucks. But other than that, that's the only regret I have in all my hockey career.
Definitely does sound like it's a suck situation. We found it bad enough when they said the Elite League was being cancelled, and we're four guys who are just fans. Any questions from you, Danny?
Yeah, the only question I've really got, and it is an unusual one. With netminders, obviously, a standard number that they go for across any league is one, any number between 33 and 36 for some reason. But for you, I think you wore 51 when you were with the Blaze. I think you've wore 51 with most places. Why 51? Is that a special kind of number to yourself?
I wanted 61. Johnny had it, I think.
Andrew Johnson, yeah.
Yeah. So Johnny had it and he signed earlier. He's also had more seniority than I did, so he chose it. So 61 is my preferred number.
Yeah.
What I always wanted to have. And I was only able to wear it in one other team, like in Florida was the only team I was able to wear 61.
Yeah.
But that was it, just because that was the year both my parents were born. So I kind of wanted to wear it for that reason. Some teams don't let goalies choose their numbers. Sucks, but they just give you that like one 33. So yeah, just 61 wasn't available, unfortunately. I had to go a step down. Didn't really, the 51 didn't really mean much of anything.
Nah, right. So 61's the number then, and it's got a special reason, obviously, with both parents. That's a good thing. At least it's obviously got a reason behind it. It's not just a random number.
Yeah, that was it. It would have been nice to wear it. I don't even know. I've just been on so many teams. Sometimes they just give you a number. Like, all right, I'll just, when you show up halfway through the year, you do that sometimes. So it's the way it goes.
Brilliant. Well, on that note, thank you for the time this evening, Jamie. Thank you for joining us. Hopefully your coaching career goes really well when we get hockey back, and best of luck for the future. That is all for this week's episode of the Third Period Podcast. Hopefully we'll be back in the ice rink watching some hockey soon. Stay safe.
Thanks again for listening to the Third Period Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to check out Willie's Ice Hockey Emporium for all your ice hockey needs.